Support for State Week comes from the following sponsors: Visit Springfield, PIORG, and the Illinois Education Association.
From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, should Illinois adopt a new funding formula for higher education? Some campuses are on board with the idea. The University of Illinois, not one of them. We'll talk about that and more coming up here on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Shirley Wheeler, Professor Emeritus, and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Shirley's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week is Peter Hancock, a reporter with Capital News Illinois. Peter, good to have you back with us.
Thanks, Sean. Good to be here.
So, Peter, there's a lot of talk about trying to do something for higher education, similar to what has been done for elementary and secondary education, where the schools that receive less money could possibly get a little bit more. What is going on with this? How would this work?
Well, it would work a lot like, it's called the evidence-based funding formula for K-12 schools. And essentially, it calls for setting up a formula where you establish an adequacy target for each university, and then you pump in a certain amount of new money every year, and the campuses that are furthest away from their target would be first in line for the new money. And the campuses that are closest to their target would be last in line. This has been brewing for some time. I think it was in 2021, the General Assembly passed a bill to set up a commission to come up with a new funding mechanism that would provide more adequacy, more equity among the campuses, and more stability and predictability. And part of this grew out, I think, of the two-year-long budget impasse, which, you know, it hit every state program and every state agency pretty hard. But really, higher education took the brunt of the mayhem that happened during that period. And in particular, the smaller regional schools, Western Illinois in Macomb, Eastern Illinois in Charleston, Northern Illinois, these smaller regional schools are really in kind of dire financial straits, and it hasn't gotten much better. Since then, what we've been doing, especially during the Pritzker administration, is each year there might be a funding increase for higher ed, maybe, let's say, a 3% increase. And so every campus would get a 3% increase over what it was they were getting before. So for U of I, for example, which is the flagship university between the three campuses, I think has just a little over 100,000 students in Urbana-Champaign, Chicago, and Springfield. 3% of a very large number is more than 3% of a smaller number. And so the disparity in funding just keeps getting wider and wider. And you've got schools now like Western and Eastern that are, you know, looking at staff layoffs and program cuts and all kinds of things that are kind of unpleasant. So this new funding formula, it's been debated for a couple of years. Last year, it didn't even get out of a Senate committee, in large part because of opposition from U of I. And their concern is that under this formula, when new money comes in, they would get a smaller cut of it than they would get under the present system. And they're also concerned that in future years, if there's ever a time when the state can't add money or the state has to reduce funding for higher education, those universities that are closest to their target would be the first in line for cuts, but they're the last in line for increases. So there's a lot of concern at U of I. Meanwhile, there is a lot of concern at all the other campuses that under the present system, they're just barely able to survive financially. So just on Thursday, this passed out of a House committee this time, and we'll see what it does on the floor of the House. U of I, you know, It's, like I said, the flagship university. It has alumni in every corner of the state, and it has a lot of political muscle when it comes to the legislature. So whether or not their opposition will prevent the bill from going through at all, we'll have to see. It's going to be interesting both on a policy standpoint and a political standpoint.
Yeah, Charlie, as somebody who's worked in higher education yourself, what do you think of this idea?
I think there are a couple of factors that are driving this. One is just the I guess you'd say the shortage of potential students. If you look at the cohorts of the birth rates, the kids graduating from high school now, there's just a lot fewer than there would have been a decade ago or a generation ago. And so the universities that exist are fighting for a smaller pool of students. So that is part of it. And also, I think the current administration, the President Trump and his executives are clamping down on students from other countries coming to the U.S. to study. And that's affected, it doesn't affect the regional universities nearly as much as the U of I and Champaign. The difficulty of a student who would want to come and study here, the difficulty of getting a visa in the first place, in the sense that the U.S. is no longer a welcoming place for folks of color, for folks who are not Christian nationalists. If I'm a smart kid, say in China, I may look at Australia or I may look at Great Britain as a potential place is preferable to the U.S. So you have those two kind of gigantic factors that make it more difficult for universities here to keep up their enrollment. One of the things I found interesting about this legislation is that it basically says, here is our program and we're going to do this. But on the other hand, we really don't have any commitment to put any money behind it. And I think the sponsor, Carol Ammons, who is from Urbana, a Democrat, said funding for the plan would be subject to legislative appropriations each year, and that her legislation merely establishes a policy under which the new money would be distributed. And so if there is new money, this is how it would go out. And if there isn't new money, if there are other more pressing issues, then it's sort of a kind of a good wishes, but can't do it. From my experience, the legislature has done that fairly frequently, going back in my time, going back, good grief, 50 years or more, where somebody will come up with a program that sounds really good, but they don't put any money behind it.
You know, for a lot of these campuses, it has to do a lot with enrollment. We've seen enrollment drop. I know Carbondale, for example, was a pretty big campus about 30 years ago and is about less than half of that now. And you're seeing that at Western and many other schools around the state. The U of I has kept and actually grown enrollment through the years. So I can see their point of why they're saying that. I am a University of Illinois employee. I'm taking a side on this, but I can see their point of saying, hey, we're the ones that are still, you know, thriving at this point when it comes to the number of students on campus. And that makes this a little bit harder, I think, for people to vote for it.
Well, I mean, that does come up every now and then. There are some legislators who say, you know, you look at the campuses that are struggling and you ask yourself, why are they struggling? Is it just because of finances, or is it because, you know, the programs that they offer or just their position in the market may not be all that attractive right now? One of the other factors going on, though, and this is somewhat unique to Illinois, has been the trend of out-migration of students. And that has been largely due to the underfunding of higher education. Because of the underfunding, schools have they've had to raise tuition and fees. And if you're a campus like Eastern or Western and you start jacking up your tuition, you know, it's a small school to begin with, but when you start making it really expensive, then students start looking to go elsewhere. U of I has been, you know, just because of its size and, you know, the comprehensive offerings that it has, it's been able to sustain itself. to some extent through international students at a lot of flagship state universities around the country. You see, for a long time, international students, because they come in paying the full non-resident tuition and fees. So, you know, they're kind of a cash cow. You maybe don't see that so much at Southern in Carbondale or Edwardsville or Macomb or Charleston. It's a little harder for them to compete in that market. So yeah, there are a lot of factors that go into, you know, what makes one school more successful and more attractive than another at any given time. The smaller schools will tell you that, you know, they draw primarily from lower socioeconomic classes, that you tend to have a lot more Pell Grant eligible students, kids from rural areas, kids from smaller high schools. You know, so they're in a different market, and it's more expensive for them. They need more funding, and they have fewer sources that, you know, they may not have the endowment funds that the bigger universities have. So there are a lot of factors that go into it, essentially.
We'll be back with more in a moment.
Support for State Week comes from Visit Springfield, featuring dozens of attractions and overnights on Route 66 in the capital city. Springfield is home to numerous Lincoln sites, Frank Lloyd Wright's Dana Thomas House, the Illinois State Capitol, and more. The Visit Springfield team can help organizers plan their event in the capital city. Attractions and tourism information at visitspringfieldillinois.com.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, along with Charlie Wheeler and Peter Hancock of Capital News Illinois. And Peter, all of this discussion going on at the same time, the governor took some action just recently where he signed an executive order creating a group to take a closer look at getting more people college degrees and more, also getting them more secondary type of credentials, I guess you would say, for different things that might be needed in the workplace. How does this all work together as far as getting more people to do higher education?
It began maybe 15, 16 years ago. The state put together what's called the P20 Council, which stands for preschool through graduate school, trying to look at the whole educational system from beginning to end as one continuous whole. And the question that they were asked was, what percentage of the Illinois population do we think needs to have a post-high school credential, either a college degree or an industry certificate or, you know, an associate's degree or some sort of post-secondary training. And at the time, they set a goal that said we need about 60% of the adult population to have, you know, post-secondary credentials in order to meet the workforce demands from industry and major employers. 15 years later, it was 2025, the report came out, said we came just short of that. The state made a lot of progress over 15 years, it came just short. And so now this year, through an executive order, Governor Pritzker has said, let's set up another council to take another look at this and set a new goal. Maybe it's going to be 65, maybe 70%. There are all kinds of estimates out there that say, you know, in the future, you know, 70, 75% of all the jobs in the economy are going to need a post-secondary credential. So he set up this new new commission, sort of a task force or a working group that's going to study this and supposedly report back to the governor and to the legislature, you know, by the end of this year. And this does sort of dovetail into the conversation about higher education funding. Where do we need to put our money? Do we need to put our money into community colleges, into career and technical education, into apprenticeship programs, into public universities? The answer is probably yes to all of those.
Yeah, Charlie, I think the goal behind this, everybody can probably get on board with this, not that everybody has to go to college, but some type of training, but it all comes down in the end of the day to money, and that's something right now the state doesn't have a lot to throw around, it seems.
Yeah, and I think, as I kind of indicated earlier, with this plan to create a sort of evidence-based funding formula for higher education, such as exists for K-12, the key is going to be, are we actually going to have any funds to put in it? We've done some other things, I think, to try and make it easier for people to get college accreditations. I think there are a number of community colleges whose students have kind of a guaranteed admissions to a four-year institution. I think there's also opportunities for high school students to earn college credits. So maybe if you take the advanced placement courses, you would be able to get out of a semester in school. And I think there's also a move afoot in higher education to, I don't want to use the word dumb down, but to slim the number of credits you need to get a degree, so that maybe instead of having to go 4 years, you only need to go 3 years. Those are efforts to try and ease the burden. And one of the things I noticed, Peter, in your story the other day, you talked about Pritzker bragging that the percentage of in-state undergrad students at public universities paying no tuition or fees has risen to 44% last fiscal year, up from only 24% in 2018. So we're trying to figure out ways to get people prepared for the careers of the future, and not even to start to talk about what impact artificial intelligence will have. I mean, there's some predictions that, like, artificial intelligence will take over many of the jobs affiliated with universities. Many of the white collar jobs will be done by some AI.
Yeah, and I think that also creates a possibility of, we're not just talking about kids coming out of high school and trying to get them into college. We could be talking about people needing to go back for certain training or maybe trying to get a different degree later on in life. Would that be the case, Peter?
Well, yeah. I was thinking back to, when I got out of high school, let's say in the 1970s, it was probably the end of that particular era, but it was still possible to come out of high school and get a job in the local community in some sort of manufacturing, factory work, blue collar work that didn't require a whole lot of training beyond high school. That economy is now gone. Almost any job you can think of now requires something beyond high school, whether it's going to be an associate's degree or some sort of advanced training. Even in manufacturing, much of which has gone overseas, but what manufacturing has left, even that requires a lot of additional training now. So it's a much different economy today than it was, say, a generation or two ago. So that's part of, a big part of what they're looking at now is what is the economy of the future? What are going to be the workforce demands? As Charlie mentioned artificial intelligence, I live in fear of the day when AI is going to start writing news stories. I'll be put out of a job, but I hope that doesn't happen anytime soon.
And it's already there, in some cases. But Charlie, it gets back to this idea of from a university standpoint, if you're going to get more people in, you're going to need some of these campuses and places for people to go and get educated or train. And I can see why some of these smaller campuses are saying, if you don't do something, we may not be here.
Yeah, and I think that's the worry. And as a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, there have been a number of private colleges that have had to close for the fact of lack of students and lack of resources. Now, the University of Illinois is certainly the most well-positioned of any of the public universities. And I would guess that in Illinois, University of Chicago, Northwestern are probably the only ones that are as well-situated as the U of I in terms of the reputation being recognized as outstanding institutions internationally, and then as well as having humongous endowments that in really hard times they can dip into their endowment. I'm guessing, and I don't know, and this is just my supposition, that Eastern Illinois doesn't have a particularly large endowment, nor would Western Illinois have a particularly large endowment. And they're not from areas, particularly Western is not from an area with a huge population, lots of manufacturing, lots of things that could contribute to it. So I'm looking at Western and Eastern as probably maybe Northeastern and Chicago or Governor's State being the ones that are most in jeopardy, so to speak, of long-term survival, unless something is done like this particular legislation that would pump additional money in them to help them meet their needs.
You're listening to State Week.
Support for State Week comes from PIORG, a nonprofit consulting firm providing resources for strategic planning, best practice implementation, and outcomes-focused program evaluation across the country, helping organizations make data understandable and actionable, enabling change makers to strengthen critical skills and serve others more effectively. PI, Plan, Implement, Evaluate. Services and information at PIORG.org.
We're back on State Week, and in the time we have left, let's talk for a moment about insurance. There's some legislation moving through the legislature. A lot of this tied back to the rate hikes a lot of people experienced here in the last year. Governor was not happy with that, many lawmakers either. So, Peter, what are they doing in response?
That rate hike, Governor Pritzker, as you mentioned, was very harshly critical of it, basically accusing the insurance company of shifting losses from other states like California with the wildfires and Texas and Florida with hurricanes, shifting their property casualty losses onto Illinois, which people might think of as a relatively safer state. The insurance company said, no, that's not true. Illinois has, in fact, seen a tremendous increase in the size and frequency of catastrophic storms, hail damage, tornadoes, severe thunderstorms, those kinds of things. But it also sort of highlighted the fact that Illinois is unique among states in that it has very, very lax regulation of the insurance industry. Unlike all the other states, it had no law that says insurance companies cannot charge excessive, inadequate, or unfairly discriminatory premiums. It's been kind of a Wild West situation in Illinois for a very long time, where companies charge whatever they charge. They have to file their rates with the state insurance department. They have to abide by their contracts. The state exercises some minimal amount of regulation over the way they operate, and they have to honor their policies. But in terms of setting rates, it's been sort of an open field. And the people in the industry will tell you that that has brought a lot of additional players into Illinois. Illinois consumers have a lot of different options, and the prices are comparatively low relative to a lot of other states. But at the same time, you have, companies, implementing these significant rate hikes, just like 27% just all at once. And the thing is that within the real estate market, as well as, within auto insurance, insurance is not an option. The real estate market wouldn't exist if we weren't able to indemnify ourselves against potential losses. I mean, nobody would go out and spend $250,000 or borrow $250,000 to buy a house knowing that a tornado could come along next week and flatten it and you would have no ability to replace it or repair it. What has happened is a bill has moved out of committee. It's advancing in the legislature that would impose, give the Illinois Insurance Department the ability to review and approve or deny rate increases. It would also require companies to give consumers like 60 days notice if they're going to increase rates by 10% or more. The insurance industry is still very much opposed to this.
Charlie, they're going to have to do something, whether this is what occurs or not. I mean, it seems like they're going to have to address this in some way.
Yeah, and I think it was interesting because a similar bill that would apply only to the homeowners insurance actually passed the Senate last fall, but failed on the House. It didn't come up for a vote, and it didn't pass. And one of the arguments was, well, what about auto insurance? this particular bill includes auto insurance as well as homeowners insurance. And so that, I think, gives it additional legs. If I'm not mistaken, I believe the sponsor indicated that there could be further amendments. It's now in the Senate for the Senate to decide whether or not they want to agree with the House amendment that kind of changed the bill from what it initially was. And it would not at all surprise me if this winds up in a conference committee, which is a mechanism by which the two chambers kind of negotiate out the differences. And it comes up as a report that will be voted on probably almost 2 months from now.
It's time now for our notes from the field. And Peter, we'll go to you first this week.
One of the things moving in the background that hasn't gotten a whole lot of attention so far in the General Assembly is this new state agency called the Department of Early Childhood. This was something that Governor Pritzker called for, to consolidate all of the early childhood programs, you know, from daycare and preschool and lots of other things into a single agency. That new agency becomes fully operational in the next fiscal year, and it is going to absorb a lot of responsibilities and a lot of authority over, like, daycare licensing, over doing background checks for daycare workers, for funding preschools throughout the state. This is a huge organizational and executive management challenge, just logistically getting all of these things moved from a whole bunch of different agencies into this one new agency. There are lots of bills moving through and administrative regulations moving through to try and shift responsibilities from other places into this new agency. And it's going to be interesting to watch. Their goal is to make this all happen seamlessly so that people won't even notice. And then you're going to wake up one day and this new agency will be in charge and everything's going to be fine. Things usually don't work out quite that simply.
All right. And Charlie.
Well, the governor announced earlier that the film production expenditures in Illinois hit a record-breaking high of $703 million last calendar year, supporting an estimated 18,000 jobs, which is a 25% increase since before the pandemic in 2019. And the governor said, and this is his quote, "By investing in our workforce, expanding our film tax credit, and building world-class production infrastructure, Illinois is creating good union jobs and attracting major productions from across the industry. With more than $700 billion in film production in 2025, the message is clear. Illinois is a top destination to make movies and television."
All right, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Capital News Illinois' Peter Hancock. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.
Support for State Week comes from the members of the Illinois Education Association, serving 135,000 members of educators and support professionals around Illinois. IEA's mission is to promote excellence and equity in public education. When schools and communities unite, we all win. Resources and membership information at ieanea.org.